worldwide. AGA reporting live from Cape Canaveral. MK, Big Sight, let's rap.
Back in time.
Welcome back into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. If you notice, we didn't have a reaction episode to all the great games that took place over the course of the week three weekend. And yes, there's a reason for that. It was a crazy, hectic week, as you might imagine. I have some news to make in the coming weeks. I will not get into that right now just because still got some logistics to sort through, but there is some fairly big news coming down the track, and don't worry, that it's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. And when I have more information, I will make sure to share. But in the meantime, I'm going to do a brief reaction to everything that happened over the course of week three. I have to address some quarterback play in the SEC. Have a fresh new week four PK poll that I'm going to get into. And also, we got to make picks and previews for this upcoming weekend of college football. And it is a great slate of games. So, loaded, jam-packed show. Let's go ahead and get into it. But before we do, please make sure that, one, you're following me on the socials, because I put out all this stuff on Twitter and Instagram. When I do rankings of any sort, that goes out on Twitter. When I post a new show, that goes out on Twitter. So make sure that you're following me on Twitter and on Instagram so you can see all of that. I'm at Parker_Kelly10. And also, make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast, The Game Nashville Sports Network, wherever you get your fine listening materials. You'll find every episode of The Air Raid there, and you'll find all of the great podcasts that we're doing here at 102.5 The Game. Now that that is out of the way, let's get into the good stuff. So we had a ton of really, really great games that happened over the course of last weekend. And of course, that starts with Georgia-Tennessee. Just an instant classic, arguably the best game of the weekend. I would say that Georgia Tech-Clemson has a case to be up there as well, as does Notre Dame and Texas A&M. But Georgia-Tennessee was my personal favorite game of the day to watch. I cannot believe I have some friends, actually several friends, that were unfortunately, not by their own will, they were dragged to fall weddings, so they missed this game. In fact, they missed pretty much the whole day of college football. What a sick, sick world that we do live in. And there were some people that weren't actually watching this game because, I don't know, they were probably at the park or going on a picnic. If you weren't watching this game, first of all, what are you doing with your life? And second of all, why weren't you watching this? Because it was absolutely electric. 85 combined points, just whatever the over-under was for this game, it was the over should have been hammered because it definitely hit the over. So Georgia beats Tennessee in overtime, 44-41. I'm going to be honest, as I was watching this game, there was a point specifically after the first quarter where I thought, it really looks like Tennessee is going to get their monkey off their backs, Josh Heupel specifically, he's never beaten Georgia before. That doesn't mean that he can't. It just means that he hasn't yet. He's going to do it. And of course, you know, it was just the first quarter. Tennessee had a great first quarter. They put up 21 points. Under Josh Heupel, Tennessee has never scored more than 17 points up until this game. And they scored 21 points in the first quarter against a really solid Georgia defense. And yet, Georgia found a way. And you know that we talk about winners first on this show, so that's exactly what we're going to do. Georgia elbowed their way through this game. There are so many questions about Gunnar Stockton. How is he going to be able to, or how is he going to look throwing the football? How is Georgia's offense going to look against a really solid Tennessee team that is without both of their starting corners in Jermon McCoy and Ricky Gibson? They're without two interior defensive linemen and David Hobbs and Jackson Moy. How's Georgia's offense going to look? Because they looked lethargic through the first 2 weeks of the season. They didn't get great use out of their tight ends. Like, Georgia typically has done in the last 4 to 5 years. But Gunnar Stockton, he came out and he threw for 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, scored on their first drive of the game. The last touchdown from Gunnar Stockton to Landon Humphreys, just chef's kiss. The offense had no problem, it looked like, because they scored 44 points. And if you would have told me that Tennessee had a 21-7 lead after the first quarter, but yet Georgia would find a way to score 40 points in that game, you just had to watch it. That's honestly the best way to put it. You just had to watch it. Georgia also, not to mention, had 198 yards on the ground and 300 through the air. So over 500 yards of offense. It was truly incredible to watch, because Kirby Smart admitted in the post game that Tennessee deserved to win the game. And I would agree, Tennessee did deserve to win the game. The only problem is they had a chance and they didn't capitalize on it. Now, I'm not one that is going to blame the missed field goal that Tennessee had at the end of regulation to potentially win the game. I'm not going to look solely at that point and say, yeah, that's that right there, that's why Tennessee lost. Because it's not. There are multiple factors that played into the fact that why Tennessee lost. They gave up 44 points on the scoreboard. They let Gunnar Stockton throw for 304 yards. Their run defense gave up 198 on the ground. There are several factors into that. Yeah, Tennessee, the effort was there. Joey Aguilar was so impressive. Yeah, you could make an argument that they deserved to win the game. But Georgia ultimately found a way in a tough road environment. I would say the toughest place to play in college football. And their offense, it was on the backs of their offense and not the backs of their defense, which is something that we don't typically say about Georgia. And they won the game, and it was impressive. And I think that just shows you how elite of a coach that Kirby Smart is and his team embodies his personality, because Georgia, typically, their backbone has been really good defense. We're going to run the football. But they found a way to adapt and win in a different way. And it was a truly incredible game. Now for Tennessee. Yes, Tennessee is 2-1 on the year. Yes, they lost the game. They were ranked 15th in the AP poll coming into this game. The latest AP poll did not move them. Just had them right there at 15. I would actually, despite how much I come after the AP poll, because I think that many of them are terrible at their jobs, I personally wouldn't have dropped Tennessee. In fact, I may even bump them up a little bit because of how impressive they looked, because not all losses are equal. They took Georgia to overtime, and I thought the effort was there enough so to win the game. Joey Aguilar was 24 of 36 for 371 yards, threw for 4 touchdowns, also ran for one. I was watching this game, and after the first quarter, I was thinking to myself, this guy got to campus in May, had to learn the offense in the matter of a few months, won the starting job in August, and is now playing, it seems like, Heisman Trophy contention football. And I think to myself, this shouldn't be possible. Josh Heupel's a wizard. He took and this whole Joey Aguilar and Nico Iamaleava trade situation just gets funnier and funnier by the day, because you look at and you see what's going on over there at UCLA. You look and you see what's going on with Nico. And now Joey Aguilar in Knoxville, and kind of how that team, how the city of Knoxville, really how the state and the nation rallies around this guy who almost quit football to become a firefighter. And you just see the story and you see the type of performance that he had on Saturday. And it's just one of the things that makes college football, college football. And I watched this game and I've looked at highlights. I've looked at box scores. I've looked at stats. I've looked at all of it. And those two teams that I watched play in Neyland Stadium on Saturday, both of those teams are playoff contenders, and there's really no changing my mind on that. So I told you this would be pretty brief, and I want to get into some other games because there were a lot of good games. Let's go ahead and move to one of the games that happened at night, and that was Texas A&M and Notre Dame. And this was right up there for games of the day. So far, one of the games of the year. And I know it's early, but it's been one of the games of the year. Texas A&M wins this one in South Bend 41-40 over the Fighting Irish. And I watched this game, and I think to myself, you know, in previous years, this would have been a game that Texas A&M lost. But they won. They were in a one-possession game on the road facing a tough Notre Dame team, and they found a way to win in the clutch moments, actually came down to the last play of the game. And that just shows me that there is a culture shift at Texas A&M under Mike Elko. Because again, like I said, previous Texas A&M teams would not have won this game. There is a culture shift happening under Mike Elko. And I believe Texas A&M, what has been the problem? Because it's College Station. You have basically unlimited NIL money. You're in the heart of Texas where high school football reigns supreme. You can basically go out and get any recruit that you want. It's just that in College Station at Texas A&M, they haven't had the right people in place. And I'm talking organizationally, coaches, athletic staff. They haven't had the right people in place to get the most out of their players, because there's no doubt that Texas A&M has had talented rosters. They've had talented recruiting classes. Heck, they had 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I guess, in 2022, they had the number one overall recruiting class, and that turned out to mean absolutely nothing because Jimbo Fisher got fired, and we all know how that went. So what's the difference? What's the difference with this Texas A&M team? Well, they went out, they won a game on the road that in years past they wouldn't have won, and they did it behind Marcel Reed. How about that? Marcel Reed, he's getting a lot of praise before the season officially kicked off. I have been high on Marcel Reed. Now, I did, admittedly so, I did doubt his ability as a passer. I had no doubt that Marcel Reed was a great athlete, which he is. I had no doubt that he could occasionally hit the deep ball, but in this game versus Notre Dame, Marcel Reed threw for over 360 yards and two touchdowns. And think about this. When we previewed Texas A&M before the season started, we said the strength of this team would be the defense and running the football. Texas A&M has a three-headed monster at running back. They have one of the deepest offensive lines in the SEC. Texas A&M collectively ran for 128 on the ground. Their best rusher, Le'Veon Moss, had 81 carries. Now, that's good, but it's not what you would expect from Texas A&M in this spot. Instead, what got them over the hump was the passing game. Again, 360 yards from Marcel Reed, averaged over 20 yards a completion for Marcel Reed. Unbelievable stuff right there. And a huge performance, a clutch performance from Marcel Reed. I feel like this is the performance that you needed to see from a guy like Marcel Reed to say, okay, He's on our radar if he wasn't already. Let's flip the page to Notre Dame. Notre Dame has now fallen to 0-2 after losing week one to Miami. They didn't play in week two. They didn't have a game in week two. And they welcome Texas A&M into their building week three, and they lose 41-40, a heartbreaker. What happened to the Notre Dame defense? What happened to the Notre Dame defense? That's my big question. Because this was a team that, for the most part, had, you can make the case that they had the best defense in the country last year. They allowed 15.5 points per game in 2024, which was tied for fourth nationally and fewest points allowed. They ranked 11th in yards allowed under defensive coordinator Al Golden, who is now with the Cincinnati Bengals. They bring in Chris Ash, who has head coaching experience at Rutgers, and they give up 40 points in this spot. Now, what really concerns me is the fact that Marcel Reed could basically do whatever he wanted to in the passing game. Again, like I said, allowing 20 yards a completion. This is a Notre Dame secondary who has Leonard Moore, who many believe to be the best corner in college football. They have Christian Gray, who is another great corner as well. The defense, there wasn't expected to be a huge drop-off as long as Marcus Freeman was the head coach. And now we've seen that he is going to assume, or he's going to take on an increased role with the team's defense since they have been struggling. And he's got to get it fixed, because Notre Dame, they have a pretty workable schedule now that two of their toughest games are out of the way. They do have to play at Arkansas on September 27th. Notre Dame better thank their lucky stars that that's not a night game, because if it was, I'd pick Arkansas to win outright. But it is an 11 a.m. early kickoff. We'll have to see what happens. They also play USC on October 18th. So they do have some tough games coming up, but for the most part, it's pretty workable. They got to get the defense figured out, because I don't know what's going on. They ran the football better in this game. Jeremiah Love, 23 carries, 94 yards. Jadarian Price, 12 carries for 68 yards, averaged over 5 yards a carry. He had two touchdowns. Jeremiah Love had one, so that's a significant improvement from what happened week one. But the defense, man, just giving up close to 500 yards on offense to Texas A&M. It's just so unlike Notre Dame. So that was my big takeaway from the Notre Dame perspective. Let's go ahead and move on to Georgia Tech and Clemson. I love this because I predicted it outright to happen. For those of you that have been listening, you know that I predicted Georgia Tech to win outright versus Clemson. And so many people were shocked. Some considered this an upset. But if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that it shouldn't have been considered an upset, because Georgia Tech has a good team. Clemson, there are some questions. Dabo Swinney has certainly been pretty animated in his press conferences this week. But Georgia Tech, let's talk about Georgia Tech. Haynes King, when you think college football, you think of college football quarterbacks. I want you to think of Haynes King. Haynes King on Saturday versus Clemson had 25 carries. Haynes King had 25 carries in this game for 103 yards. He was the team's leading rusher, and he had a touchdown on the ground. Now, through the air, he was 20 of 28 for 211 yards. He did not have a touchdown pass, but he got it done on the ground. Georgia Tech, here's why. If you're wanting to know the simple way of why, or the simple answer of why Georgia Tech won this football game, it boils down to this right here. Georgia Tech knows their identity, and they play to their identity strengths. Clemson, on the other hand, doesn't know what their identity is, and therefore they lost the game against a really good Georgia Tech team on the road. If we're looking at Georgia Tech, Haynes King is a baller, man. If there's someone in your life who is not caught up to the speed with the rest of us in terms of college football fandom, I want you to show them the last 30 seconds of this game and let me know what happens. Because there's no way that you can watch how this game played out, the final minutes, the ticking seconds on the clock, and you just, there's no way that you can't be totally 100% enthralled with what's going on your screen. It's impossible. It's impossible not to be. Here's my thing about Georgia Tech, is they embody the personality of their head coach, Brent Key. Many questioned Brent Key's decision-making towards the end of the game, and you could see that as things were getting tighter and tighter and seconds were ticking off the clock, that Brent Key, I don't even think he broke a sweat on the sidelines, and there's a reason for that. In the post-game interview, he talked about the fact that he trusts his team, and he trusts his players to get it done in these big-time moments, and certainly they came through. Haynes King, again, the 25 carries, that's great that he did this versus Clemson. This will not be sustainable. It will not be a sustainable way to win, because Haynes King, he just looks beat up every time he plays a football game in which he carries the ball 20 or more times. That's not going to be sustainable. You're going to have to keep him healthy. Clemson, on the other hand, has a lot bigger fish to fry right now because they are now 1-2 after many, myself included, predicted them to win the ACC. I actually had this game as my ACC championship game prediction. But they have a lot of questions to figure out because you lose week one to LSU, you lose week three to Georgia Tech, and granted your schedule isn't overly difficult, but you still have Florida State in there, you still have Louisville, you still have South Carolina at their place, so you still have SMU as well, and then if you're fortunate enough to make the ACC championship, which I'm just not sure about right now, granted the early returns, it's going to be tough, and I know Dabo's going to catch a lot of slack for not using the transfer portal, but you're telling me if you don't go out and you get 2 to 3 more playmakers from the portal, that that doesn't at least help the outcome in your favor on Saturday? I struggle to believe otherwise. So Clemson's got a lot of things to figure out on their end, and I'll just leave it at that because we got a loaded show to get through. Miami and South Florida. Miami blew them out 49-12. I expected Miami to win. I expected them to win handedly. This was a beatdown, and I know that the game got delayed a little bit due to inclement weather, but Miami, they're legit. They're legit, and you're about to find out where I have them ranked in the latest PK poll. LSU and Florida. Yes, I did hear Brian Kelly's press conference. I heard the animated answer. It's kind of hard not to. LSU wins one over Florida 20-10. Yeah, this I think a lot of you know where I'm going to go with this one, but DJ Lagway did not look like the DJ Lagway that a lot of us, myself included, portrayed him to be in the preseason leading up to the official kickoff. He threw 5 interceptions, and to kind of put that in perspective, there are 120 quarterbacks in college football and FBS that have thrown less than 5 interceptions. DJ Lagway threw 5 interceptions in one game. Now, LSU's defense is drastically improved in the 2 years that they've been under defensive coordinator Blake Baker. Florida, I just cannot understand. DJ Lagway, this is a Florida team that is built to, okay, if DJ Lagway is not having the success through the air, Florida should be able to win in other ways. They should be able to rely on their defense. They should be able to rely on their starting offensive line to create gaps for them to run the football. But they just kept turning to the pass, and it wasn't working. And they kept doing it. So I just can't wrap my mind around that. But now Florida is 1-2. And you want to look at the stretch of games they have coming up. They're at Miami this week, which we will predict. They have Texas. They're at Texas A&M. They have Mississippi State. They have Georgia. That tough stretch. So they better get things figured out quickly in Gainesville. Okay, keeping a brisk pace here on the show. Vanderbilt and South Carolina. That was another great game. One that I was really looking forward to watching. And yes, Lenore Sellers did exit the first half early, and he has a concussion, so he did not play in the second half, but I really don't think that had as much of an impact on the game as most people would make it out to be, because Vanderbilt basically pants South Carolina in their own building, and they were dominating the lines of scrimmage, really, the entire game, even when Lenore Sellers was in the game. This Vanderbilt team is legit. We've been talking about it a lot this week here at 102.5 since we are the flagship station of Vanderbilt. But Diego Pavia, man, dude's a baller. 18 of 25, 177 yards, 2 touchdowns. Not the most impressive stat line. Vanderbilt also added 146 yards on the ground. Here's what really is impressive, the impressive stat for Vanderbilt. They forced 4 South Carolina turnovers, and South Carolina was penalized 8 times for 85 yards, while Vanderbilt was penalized 5 times for 55 yards. Vanderbilt controlled the time of possession, 35-43 to 24-17. I'm very excited for Vanderbilt, and here's why. They have Georgia State this week. This was a team that they lost to last year. They're going to have a chip on their shoulder heading into that game. And then they have Utah State the following week. So there is a very likely chance that Vanderbilt is going to be 5-0 heading into Alabama week, which they will go to Tuscaloosa this year, and there are going to be a lot of eyeballs on that game. I'm very excited. South Carolina has been a team that they've kind of been, you know, after the Virginia Tech game, because I didn't know how good Virginia Tech was going to be, and clearly after their 0-3 start and after they fired Brent Pry, clearly Virginia Tech's not a good football team. South Carolina has been a team that has kind of backslid a little bit in terms of their offense because they haven't gotten Lenore Sellers going to the level that they would hope. And now that he's out with a concussion and they have to rely on Luke Doty, South Carolina, they have some questions on offense. And that's something that I said in the preseason, why I didn't pick South Carolina to make the playoffs, and I got a lot of backlash for it. But what pieces do they have to surround Lenore Sellers? They have Nick Harbor, but Nick Harbor has not reached his full potential yet. I had questions about the pass catchers. I had questions about the offensive line. I had questions about the run game. Have questions about the defense outside of guys like Dylan Stewart. And I think that some of those concerns are becoming a little bit bigger now, especially since Lenore Sellers is out. But yeah, South Carolina has been a team that has kind of backslid each week for me as I've continued to watch them play, and Vanderbilt pretty much exposed them even when Lenore Sellers was out there. So that's got to be a little bit concerning if you're a Gamecock fan. Ole Miss at Arkansas was a very good game. I think it's hilarious because Lane Kiffin is such a good football coach. He had a quarterback starting for Ole Miss by the name of Trinidad Chambliss. It sounds like an island out in the Caribbean, but no, this is an actual name. It's an actual person, a transfer from Division II Ferris State. Trinidad Chambliss was known as a running quarterback, or that's what many thought that he would be, but let's see what Lane Kiffin can do. Trinidad Chambliss, 21 of 29 for 353 yards and a touchdown. Lane Kiffin. It's the Lane Kiffin effect, and they beat Arkansas 41-35. And let me tell you something about Arkansas. Their quarterback, Talen Green, that dude's legit. That dude is legit, and he's very underrated quarterback. I truly think through 3 weeks, I think he's one of the top quarterbacks in the SEC. He's been playing like it. He has been playing like it, but Ole Miss squeaks one out, and they are I'm getting pretty high on the Rebels, just considering what Lane Kiffin was able to do with the backup quarterback while Austin Simmons is nursing an injury. Okay, now that we have kind of recapped some things that have happened, let's get into the good stuff, because we have to have a tough conversation about SEC quarterbacks. If you think about it, who were the quarterbacks that we were talking about from the SEC in the preseason? We were talking about guys like Arch Manning and DJ Lagway and Lenore Sellers. And if you take an overall 50,000-foot view at the SEC right now, those guys are struggling. And if I were to compose a list, I'm not going to do that today, but if I were going to compose a list of top 10 quarterbacks in the SEC through 3 weeks, Arch Manning, Lenore Sellers, DJ Lagway would be on the outside looking in. And think about the conversations that we were having in the preseason. Think about the conversations around Arch Manning and Lenore Sellers being potential Heisman candidates at the end of the year. Arch Manning, I don't even know what to say about Arch Manning right now. I was in the camp of, hey, let's just see the guy play. Like, he had 2 starts last year, and he looked really good, but it was against Mississippi State and UTEP or it was either UTEP or UTSA. I can't remember off the top of my head at the moment. But let's just see the guy play. Like, yeah, I think he's going to be really, really good. But let's just see him play. I didn't participate in the Arch Manning is going to win the Heisman. I didn't participate in that. But he would be on the outside looking in if I were to compose a list of the top 10 quarterbacks in the SEC right now. Lenore Sellers, he hasn't got going yet, and now you add the concussion to all this. DJ Lagway throwing 5 interceptions versus LSU on Saturday night in Death Valley. I mean, what is going on? And think about who has elevated their play, who has lived up or maybe even exceeded expectations. Guys like John Mateer at Oklahoma, who are right now in the early going, in the front running for odds to win the Heisman Trophy. And a lot of people became introduced to John Mateer after the Michigan game. But a lot of us diehards knew about him at Washington State. Diego Pavia at Vanderbilt. A lot of people knew about Diego Pavia. But the way Vanderbilt's played through 3 weeks, he has a large chunk of the reason why. He's the face of the program. Joey Aguilar. You saw his performance versus Georgia. This is a guy that was at App State and UCLA and then Tennessee at 3 schools in the span of a calendar year. Josh Heupel got his hands on him 4 months to go until the regular season kicked off, and look what he's done with Joey Aguilar. How about Talen Green at Arkansas? Again, a guy I just mentioned who's not getting enough love. I promise, if you just watch Talen Green play, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Big body, strong arm, can run very well. Just do yourself a favor and watch Talen Green. You'll know what I'm talking about. Marcel Reed at Texas A&M throwing for 360 yards against a Notre Dame secondary who's supposed to be elite. Bo Prabula at Missouri. Missouri's not getting enough love nationally, but Missouri's offense through 3 games has looked absolutely incredible. Now, I don't participate in these rumors, but if you go and you look at Penn State message boards and the way that Drew Aller has not necessarily broken through that hypothetical glass ceiling yet, and the way Bo Prabula is playing, a lot of people are saying, or asking rather, if Penn State made the right decision letting Bo Prabula walk. Now, I don't participate in that. I'm just, again, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just saying what I've been seeing and reading. Isn't it just funny how quickly things can change in this sport? The types of conversations that we were having the preseason to the types of conversations we're having now. Unbelievable. It's what makes this sport so great. All right. We're going to do it. It's time to get to what you all have been waiting for, and that is the Week 4 PK poll. Without further ado, let's get into it. Okay. So the top spot has not changed, and that is the Ohio State Buckeyes. Ever since Week 1, with their win over Texas, I've had Ohio State ranked at number 1. I think that goes without saying. We do have a riser. Miami has bumped up to number 2 after being ranked number 4 last week. I think Miami's resume as of right now, very impressive. The Week 1 win over Notre Dame, the Week 3 win over USF. Again, what are these rankings based off of? When I do these rankings every week, I throw my preseason expectations of a team out the window, and I focus on on-field results. What have you showed me on the field? Miami, to me, warrants this number 2 spot. Georgia, number 3. I think the win in Knoxville kind of speaks for itself. The way that they won in a manner in which Georgia, in the past, historically, has not typically won, when we were all questioning if Gunnar Stockton could throw the ball down the field. He proved that he could. And he did it in a very cutthroat environment in Neyland Stadium. Georgia is number 3. LSU, I slid them down a couple spots. Now, LSU, they have the win over Clemson in Week 1 at Clemson. But here's the thing. That win kind of gets more unimpressive by the week considering how Clemson's season has panned out so far. But they did win in a rock fight against Florida. So they do have those 2 wins, but LSU's offense has kind of struggled. They've been more reliant on their defense, which is not the types of conversations we've been having about LSU over the last couple of seasons. I do have LSU ranked at number 4. I have Oregon at 5, which I'd say is pretty fair. They've been dominant, but they haven't really had a tough opponent to face yet. But that's coming up. That is coming up because they have Penn State in 2 weeks at Penn State. Florida State at 6. Again, it's still very early, so we don't know truly how legit Florida State is, but that win against against Alabama in week one, and the fact that they've just been blowing out the teams that they played. Now it's been they didn't have a game this past week, but they played East Texas A&M in week two, and they did exactly what an elite team would do to a team like that, and they put up 77 on them. So that means something. Texas A&M, the win over Notre Dame, again clutch. Won in a way in which Texas A&M teams in the past would not have won that game. Texas A&M is up to 7. I think that's pretty obvious. Penn State is at 8. Now, I still am high on Penn State. I still like their odds in the Big Ten. I think they have a very manageable schedule once you get Oregon and Ohio State out of the way. But Penn State, again, it seems to be a step behind. Now, they haven't had tough competition either. They just seem to be a step behind. And I've dinged Penn State in my rankings because of that. But we'll see what happens once they get to Big Ten play, which is coming up. Utah is at 9. I'm convinced the AP poll voters have not watched a single snap of Utah because Utah is still ranked too low at 16. I have Utah at 9, and they're up a spot from last week when I had them at 10. Utah is playing like a top 10 football team right now. Utah has Devin Dampier on offense, who more and more people are going to start to become familiar with. Their defense is going to be good under Kyle Whittingham because it usually always is. Now they have an offense to pair with that, and they get Texas Tech on Saturday, and it's in Salt Lake. That could be a preview of the Big 12 championship game. Who knows? But I have Utah at 9. Oklahoma is at 10. Really high on John Mateer, clearly. I mean, you've heard me say that I think he's going to win the Heisman Trophy. I have Oklahoma at 10. They got a big I can't laugh without saying this. They got a big win at Temple. They got a big win at Temple in week 3. It just cracks me up that an SEC team is playing a road game at Temple. Yeah, you heard me say that right. Illinois, I have at 11. I've been impressed with Illinois, but the competition hasn't been too steep yet. But they got a win at Duke in week 2, which Duke, they just lost to Tulane this past week, so I don't really know how impressive of a win that is, but it is another Power 4 team, and Illinois blew them out. So I have Illinois at 11. I have Ole Miss at 12. I thought the win versus Arkansas was very impressive. So, and what Lane Kiffin was able to do with the backup quarterback in that game, I have Ole Miss at 12. Tennessee is at 13. They have not moved. They have not gone up nor down because they took Georgia, who I have number 3. They took the number 3 team to overtime. Very easily could have won the game. The effort was there to win the game. It just, things didn't bounce their way. I still think Tennessee's a playoff team. They performed like a playoff team. So I have Tennessee at 13. Georgia Tech is at 14. After that big win versus Clemson, Georgia Tech is legit. You would know that if you listen to the show, how often I talk about Georgia Tech. I have Vanderbilt at 15. Vanderbilt has won by 20 or more points in 3 straight games. That is the first time that's happened since 1955. This Vanderbilt team just looks different from Vanderbilt teams in the past. You look at their offensive line, that doesn't look like a typical Vandy offensive line. I'm very excited to see the direction of Vanderbilt in the future after Diego Pavia leaves, if he ever leaves, if he doesn't actually come back for a 7th year, which Diego Pavia did confirm he's not coming back for a 7th year, even though I did see a post from On3 that whoever was representing him was intriguing, I guess, or interested in getting a 7th year for Diego Pavia. They were in talks with the NCAA. Diego Pavia came out and put out the cap emoji, and that's all I need to to see regarding that. But I have Vanderbilt at 15. I'm excited to see the direction of this Vanderbilt team after Diego Pavia leaves. Will high-level recruits want to come to Vanderbilt? Do they believe in what Clark Lee has built? I think it's going to be an interesting case study to see. I have Missouri, or excuse me, I skipped one. Iowa State. How can I skip over Iowa State? I have Iowa State at 16. They did struggle a little bit in their win versus Arkansas State last week. Still like what Iowa State has done the first 3 weeks, or I guess 4 weeks for them, because they did play a week zero game. I like what they've done through 4 weeks. I have Iowa State at 16. Missouri is at 17. Their offense has been very explosive. Defense has been very solid. The run game, Ahmad Hardy, one of the best running backs, not just in the SEC, but in the country. So he's going to be a person that you're going to want to familiarize yourself with, because I think this Missouri team could be a dark horse playoff team. I have Texas Tech at 18. Texas Tech has not played anybody of note yet, but they're just absolutely splattering teams left and right, and they get Utah this week at Utah. I'm going to be glued to that game because that game's going to be a banger. I have Auburn at 19. Auburn, that week one win versus Baylor, I still put a lot of stock in that right now. The way they were able to run the football, Jackson Arnold the last 2 weeks has gotten better as a passer, or at least he's looked good as a passer. But again, the opponents have not been fantastic for them the last 2 weeks. They get Oklahoma this week, and I'm going to preview that, so I don't want to spoil anything. But I have Auburn at 19. USC is at 20. I believe the AP poll has them at 25. I had USC at 23. Again, I don't think anybody in the AP poll has watched USC. USC has not. This is the early portion of the season where you're playing cupcakes. That part is over for USC. And I really believe that their quarterback, Jaden Maiava, is going to have a big year under Lincoln Riley. Again, defensively, I feel like USC has hired correctly on the defensive staff. I expect the defense to take a step up this year. Maybe not be great yet, but they could be really good. Mississippi State is at 21. Again, Mississippi State, it's kind of hard to get a good read on them. Yes, they had the win versus Arizona State in week two. They've been putting up points, but it's just really early. So how good is Mississippi State? As of right now, I have them ranked at 21. Tulane is at 22. They just got a win versus Duke. Jake Retzlaff, their quarterback, been running the heck out of the football. Tulane is arguably one of, if not the best, Group of Five team out there right now. I have Nebraska at 23. Nebraska's been putting up points the last 2 weeks. I haven't done the math, but I know it's well over 110 points combined the last 2 weeks. Alabama is at 24. They did win versus UL Monroe. They did win versus Wisconsin. And no offense to the Warhawks, no offense to Luke Fickell and the Badgers, but that just does not move the needle a whole lot for me. That week one loss, it rears its ugly head against Florida State. Now, this doesn't mean that I think there are 23 teams better than Alabama. Again, this is based on what has happened so far in the season. And I believe there are 23 more impressive resumes right now than what Alabama has. South Florida, I have at 25. You could argue they have more impressive resume right now than Alabama. They beat Boise State, who was ranked in week one, and they beat Florida at home, or in the swamp, when Florida was ranked. So, yes, they did get splattered by Miami this past week, but they have two wins over ranked opponents. So I still have South Florida represented in my PK poll. Okay, I will put that out on Twitter, so make sure you're following on the socials so you can see that. I'll also post that to my Instagram story as well. Let's get into some game picks, and I'm going to kind of be brief on this as well because we have to go eat dinner. Texas Tech at Utah. This is the 11 a.m. game on Fox. This is going to be fun. This is going to be really fun because I believe you have two very capable offenses going up against each other. You have a Utah team who I'm going to go ahead and get this pulled up so I have a reference point here. But they put up 43 points in week one against UCLA. And then the next week, they put 63 points up against Cal Poly. And their last game in week three, they put up 31 points against Wyoming. Now, I'm not going to do quick math on this show because we don't do math. We just do college football. But they've been very explosive on offense. They are off to a 3-0 start. Texas Tech, on the other hand, again, I told you they haven't played a lot of tough opponents to start off their season. They played Oregon State last week. They won that game 45-14. The week before that, it was against Kent State. They put up 62. The week prior, in week one, against Arkansas Pine Bluff, 67 points. So you have two very explosive offenses. And I think this will be an offensive affair because it's the way Big 12 football is, even though Utah is not a traditional Big 12 team. I think it's going to come down to, this game could come down to who gets the first turnover of the game. I really think it could be a track meet. I really do. Utah is known for having good defenses under Morgan Scalley, their defensive coordinator, under Kyle Whittingham, their head coach. Texas Tech, they did struggle on defense last year, but again, they relied heavily on the transfer portal. So they went out and they got some edge rushers, some front seven pieces to try to affect the one, take away the opponent's run game, and two, affect the passer. I think Utah is going to win this game. As much as I hate to pick against my Red Raiders, because you know I've been high on Texas Tech all year, I'm leaning Utah in this game. One, I believe the home field advantage, and two, I believe in the combination of their quarterback, Devin Dampier, and their offensive coordinator, Jason Beck. I believe Utah's going to win this game. I believe it's going to be close, but I'm going to pick Utah to win this football game. Okay, moving on, we have Arkansas at Memphis. This is a game that I'm having a tough time getting a read on because Arkansas, yes, they're coming off of a loss, and Memphis is 3-0. This game is at Memphis, but I really like Arkansas's quarterback, Talen Green. So where am I led to believe? Because some people out there believe Memphis could be the representative in the group of five play or in the playoff for the group of five. I am leaning towards Arkansas because of their quarterback, Talen Green. I believe he's going to be a difference maker in this game. This is the 11 a.m. game on ABC. I'm picking Arkansas to win. SMU and TCU. This is an old-time rivalry here being played on Saturday. This is the 11 a.m. game on ESPN2. This is an interesting spot for SMU because they lost in week two versus Baylor. I don't believe the team collectively is as talented as they were last year. You have a TCU team who is 2-0, and they have a really good quarterback by the name of Josh Hoover. I believe the offense is really explosive under Hoover, but Kevin Jennings on the other side is really good as well. But I'm struggling to put trust in what SMU's defense is going to be able to do versus the bowling ball that is TCU's offense. I'm picking TCU to win this game, and not to mention TCU has the home field advantage, and I think SMU is going to fall to 2-2. Meanwhile, TCU will get off to a 3-0 start. Let's get into a really interesting game, and that is number 22 Auburn at number 11 Oklahoma. And you know the storyline, Jackson Arnold going back to Norman to face his old team, and they get Oklahoma. This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. This is the mid-afternoon game on ABC, a difficult road environment. This is where we get to see how legit Auburn is. They're represented in the AP poll. They're also represented in the PK poll, which I would argue is more important. Oklahoma, they're off to a 3-0 start. I think they're one of the only they're I think they're one of six FBS teams to start 3-0 in the last 5 or 6 years. Don't quote me on that. I just believe I saw that on social media somewhere. But how is Auburn prides themselves this year on having one of the deepest offensive lines in the SEC, and they ran the football very effectively versus Baylor. Are they going to be able to do that against Oklahoma's defense, against that defensive line, against that front seven? How is Jackson Arnold going to look throwing the football? I think that is going to be a big question mark, because if he looks good throwing the football, then Auburn has a legit chance to win this football game. Also, something that I don't think it gets talked about enough, how is the mental going to be for Jackson Arnold going back to his old stomping grounds? I'm sure there's going to be lots of emotions. That is going to play a role in Jackson Arnold's performance on Saturday. Meanwhile, we're flipping over to Oklahoma. I believe the pass catchers that they've surrounded John Mateer with should not be overlooked. John Mateer is an X factor, man. You guys saw that versus Michigan. I'm picking Oklahoma to win this game, and I actually think the spread is at, I think it's at -6.5. I like Oklahoma to cover in this game. The spread is Oklahoma -6.5 according to ESPN Bet. I think Oklahoma covers, and I think they score, beat Auburn by more than a touchdown. Tulane at Ole Miss. This is an interesting game as well, because you have the battle of 3-0 teams. I'm not sure of Austin Simmons as of this recording. I'm not sure of his health status. But if Ole Miss has to rely on Trinidad Chambliss again, I guess they can. He threw for over 350 yards. So I think Tulane is going to pose a little bit more of a challenge than Ole Miss anticipates. Ole Miss is favored by -13.5. Really like Tulane's quarterback and Jake Retzlaff, especially. I think what he does on the ground is cannot be overlooked. I think that's an X factor for him. I think Tulane. I like Tulane to cover in this game, but I still think Ole Miss will win. Michigan and Nebraska, the Bussin' Bowl. Taylor Lewan and Will Compton over there with Bussin' with the Boys. This is going to be an interesting game. This is 2:30 on CBS. Nebraska, will they win this game and get off to a 4-0 start? Will they? I don't know. Michigan, if they lose, they'll be 2-2 on the year. Here's what I really like in this game. Here's what I'm really looking forward to seeing. Nebraska's offense under Dana Holgorsen and Dylan Raiola year two versus Michigan's defense. That's going to be the matchup that I look forward to anticipating most. Also, Bryce Underwood. Michigan ran the football very effectively versus Central Michigan last week. As I pull up the stats here, and not to mention that this is the second consecutive game that Michigan is without their head coach in Sharon Moore, so they'll have Biff Poggi as their acting interim head coach. So as a team, Michigan ran for 390 yards last week versus Central Michigan. Bryce Underwood had 114 yards on the ground with two touchdowns. Justice Haynes, 14 carries for 104 yards. Will they be able to run the football and complement that with the pass better than what they did versus Oklahoma in week two? That's going to be something to look at. Here's the thing. I think Nebraska is going to win this football game. Michigan is favored by 1.5, but I think Nebraska is going to win this game, and I think it is going to be by a field goal. That is just a feeling I have. Can't necessarily explain it, but I'm going to go with my gut. I'm going to trust my gut on this one. And I like Nebraska to win the football game, get off to a 4-0 start. South Carolina at Missouri. Now, South Carolina is most likely going to be without Lenore Sellers in this game. I think that kind of sums up my pick for me. I think Missouri is very underrated, according to the AP poll. They have them at number 23. I think Missouri's offense is going to be the difference maker in this game. And if you're able to force a couple turnovers, I've seen Missouri able to win this game pretty handedly. Florida at Miami. This is the tough of a, or this is the start of a tough 5-game road stretch for Florida. If you get off to a 1-3 start, I mean, the conversations of Gainesville are already super toxic, but if you get off to a 1-3 start, which I think they will because I'm picking Miami to win this game, I'm telling you, man, Carson Beck, he's looked really good. And I'm honestly kind of happy for the guy because all the conversations in the leading up to the preseason about Carson Beck being washed and people forgetting that we were talking about him potentially being the number one overall pick, he's looked awesome. He's looked awesome through 3 weeks, and I like Miami to win this game. Illinois at Indiana. Ooh, this is an exciting Big Ten matchup. This is 6:30 on NBC and Peacock. Illinois and Indiana. Indiana, of course, has looked good on offense. They have cupcakes. You know, that's kind of the way they do things up in Bloomington, in the non-conference. You know, that's how they stack some of their wins. But you have a really tough Illinois team heading to town. And, yes, Illinois has looked good through 3 weeks. But how legit is Illinois? That's the question I think we're all kind of looking to see. Indiana is actually, I think they're projected to, the spread is IU -5.5. And I actually like that. I think Indiana is going to win this game. This game will be played at Memorial Stadium in Bloomington, Illinois. I really like what I've seen from the offense. I think this is a slip-up spot for Illinois, and I'm picking Indiana to win the game outright. Moving on, we got a couple more game previews to get to. Arizona State at Baylor, 6:30 p.m. on Fox. I just have one question about Arizona State. Are they going to be able to throw the football? Because that isn't the types of conversations we were having about Arizona State in the preseason. We thought with Sam Levitt that they were going to throw the heck out of the football, especially missing Cam Scataboo. We didn't know what their run game was going to entail. So a lot of us just assumed that they were going to rely on Sam Levitt, but Sam Levitt has really struggled through 3 weeks. He had less than 100 yards passing versus Mississippi State in week two. They ran the football a lot in the second half versus Mississippi State. He had just over 100 passing yards last week versus Texas State. So are they going to be able to throw the football and complement with the run game? Meanwhile, Baylor, Sawyer Robinson, has played like one of the best quarterbacks in the country that nobody's talked about over the last few weeks. Will Baylor be able to run the football? I think that's my big question for them. I'm picking Baylor to win this game. It's in McLane Stadium in Waco, Texas. I don't know what Arizona State is up to this point. I feel like I have a little bit of a better read on Baylor as it stands right now. And with this, if Arizona State were to lose, drop to 2-2 on the season, a lot different conversations we would be having about the Sun Devils at this point compared to what we had in the preseason. And the last game I wanted to get to, Michigan State at USC, classic Big Ten matchup right here. And why not have it kicked off any other time other than after dark, 10 p.m. on Fox? I know a lot of people, including Joe Rexrode, my colleague here at 102.5, are not happy about this. But yes, this game is being kicked off at 10 p.m. on Fox. I think that this is going to be a sneaky good game. I think Michigan State is a dark horse team in the Big Ten. They are 3-0. They beat Western Michigan, beat Boston College, beat Youngstown State, and they have to travel two time zones away. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, to take on USC. I think this will be a very close game, but I'm picking USC to win. And think about this. USC getting off to a 4-0 start before they have to play at Illinois their next game. That's a game I'm circling. The Illinois-USC game. That is a game I'm circling that eyeballs should be on, that needs to be talking about. You know we're going to talk about it here on the Air Raid previewing that. But Yeah, that is going to be interesting. I'm picking USC to win. Again, I will post all of my game picks on my social media pages, so make sure that you're following for that. Make sure that you're subscribed to the Game Nashville Sports Network, where you will get every episode of the Air Raid. Again, we're figuring out some logistics of things I will reveal at a later date. So if I'm not getting as many episodes out there, again, I'm going to try my hardest to get as many episodes out as possible. It may be one episode a week, it may be two, maybe three. I'm not entirely sure, but just bear with me. We're definitely going to talk some college football, and make sure that you're following me on the socials as well so that I can keep you up to date on everything that's going on. Really appreciate everybody that's listened. The numbers of you listening have been great, so let's keep that going. Make sure that you're subscribed. Make sure you're following. I will talk to you at some point next week. Until then, take care. Enjoy the football this weekend. God bless.